The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Some of Bob Woodward's expose of the Trump administration, Fear, a book named after the emotion Trump feels whenever he sees a book.
Yeah.
What is it? Bob Woodward is going to be here Monday. He'll be on this show in that chair over there Monday to talk all about the book. According to Bobby Dubs, nobody in the White House likes President Trump very much. Least of all, Chief of Staff John Kelly, who allegedly said, I don't even know why any of us are here. This is the worst job I've ever had. It won't be the worst job forever, General. Your worst job will be explaining to your grandkids why you worked for the big orange baby cager. Kelly also said of Donald Trump, he's an idiot. It's pointless to try to convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails. We're in crazy town. General. But it's a good thing that Kelly hasn't quit, because Trump doesn't seem to know much about the military. He is reportedly scolding his generals about Afghanistan, saying, you should be killing guys. You don't need a strategy to kill people.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And who needs a strategy in war? We all remember what Eisenhower said at D-Day. Helter skelter, little piggies. And Kelly is not alone in his assessment. In the book, Trump's former personal lawyer, John Dowd, describes the president as a liar.
I wish I knew what...
And if Michael Cohen is to be believed,
what
he also
this said.
About
what he said there. I don't know what he said there.
At one meeting. At
oh,
one.
My.
At one meeting, Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis struggled to convince the president to keep troops in South Korea. Afterwards, Mattis told associates that the president acted like and had the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader. It's all in the hit new game show, Are You Smarter Than the President? The show where everyone's a winner. And with basically that
good
show.
Good one.
It's a hit.
Good one.
Is that on CBS? CBS show. Yeah. Former Chief of Staff Ryan Priebus said the White House was like natural predators at the table, adding, when you put a snake and a rat and a falcon and a rabbit and a shark and a seal in a zoo without walls, things start getting nasty and bloody. First of all, writes, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I doubt the rabbit and the shark would ever cross paths. Second, what version of Zootopia did you see? Because it sounds fantastic. The book also has new examples of Trump mercilessly mocking everybody around him. At one point, mocking Sessions' accent.
Ooh.
Trump said, he's this dumb southerner. You know what? As a South Carolinian, that is a hurtful stereotype, sir. Not all southerners are dumb. Just the ones willing to work for you.
All right, that's a good. I could keep going with the Stephen Colbert. You know, he was gone for like 20 days or something. So good to have him back. Of course, he was going on there about the new Bob Woodward book, Fear, which I'm hoping. I just got a notification. There are two packages at my mailbox, and books are pretty much the only packages I get. So maybe it'll be there, and I'll enjoy reading it if that's the case. We'll see. We shall see. Colbert also went into the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh, the travesty that's happening in Washington, D.C. Watched some of it yesterday, watched a little bit more of it this morning. Just to give you an example of what's going on today. Yesterday, it was all the statements, all the senators got to make their opening remarks. And there wasn't much in the way of questions and answers yesterday. That's going on today. Patrick Leahy, the senior senator from Vermont, has been doing this for a long time. He's one of the senior members of the Senate. I think he said this is his 19th Supreme Court nomination or confirmation hearings. But he got right to the point of it this morning, asking Kavanaugh whether or not a president could pardon himself.
You said everyone agrees the pardon power gives a president absolute, unfettered, unchecked power to pardon every violator of every federal law. Could a president issue a pardon in exchange for a bribe? Yes or no?
Senator, I think that question has been litigated before, and
I'm not going to answer it.
I don't want to comment about it.
Of course not.
There are a couple things involved in that question. One is what's the effect of the pardon, and the other question is can you be separately charged with the bribery crime, both the briber and the bribee. And those are two distinct questions. You'd want to keep those two questions separate in thinking about how the hypothetical.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I got interrupted an awful lot during my time. I just want to finish this question.
But I made sure that if the timer didn't treat, well, give him another minute.
Thank you.
Chuck Grassley, he's so in control.
God bless you.
Hey.
I'll be forever thankful. President
what's his name?
Trump claims he has an absolute right to pardon himself. Does he?
The question of self-pardons is something I've never analyzed.
Oh, come on.
It's a question that I've not written about. It's a question, therefore, that's a hypothetical question.
And I'm not going to answer
that
it.
That I can't begin to answer in this context as a sitting judge and as a nominee to the Supreme Court.
And the other half of that is the obvious one. Does the president have the ability to pardon somebody in exchange for a promise from that person they wouldn't testify against him?
Sarah, I'm not going to answer hypothetical questions.
He's not going to answer hypothetical questions rather than saying, of course not. A president can't pardon himself. What are you, nuts? And no, of course he can't. He can't hold a pardon out there as a enticement for not spilling the beans on what a witness knows about him. Unbelievable. This guy just won't commit to anything. We'll get into it in what's news. A lot going on today. Our pal Greg Palast is going to be here. He went to Kansas, and I believe he went to Georgia to go see about those names that are being purged from the voter polls, from the voter lists. Greg Palast will fill us in on his lawsuit. Yes, he is suing. He and Jesse Jackson working together, suing to get these names back on the voting rolls. So tirelessly working for us to make sure our votes count, Greg Palast. But before we get to Greg Palast, let's get to some of the news, shall we?
I read the news today.
Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh got underway yesterday with protests, confrontations with activists, and demands that the hearing be shut down right off the bat, with Senator Kamala Harris interrupting as Chairman Chuck Grassley attempted to gavel in.
Daughters and my grandchildren.
Whoops,
was
oh
born.
No.
I think there's the same kind of controversy, and I see we're starting, so I'll shut up.
It does look like we are about to gavel in. There
here
you
we
go. Senator Chuck Grassley, let's listen in.
On the nomination of
Mr.
Judge
Chairman
Brett Kavanaugh,
and there's
Mr.
Kamala
Chairman.
Harris
to serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman,
the
I'd
Supreme
like to be recognized for a question
States.
Before we proceed.
Regular order, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome.
We have not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful
his wife,
hearing
Ashley,
on the nominee.
Their two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr.
And this
Chairman,
is Amy Klobuchar.
42,000 documents that we haven't
and
been able
else joining
to review
us
last
today.
Night, and we believe this hearing should be.
So that's how it started. So it started with Kamala Harris, then Amy Klobuchar, then Richard Blumenthal got in on it. And in fact, I want to give you that part of the Richard Blumenthal where, let's see if this will work. Oh, and the protesters, of course. Lots of protesters. I think they said there were over 70 arrests yesterday, and it started right off the bat again this morning.
We're not in an executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a roll call vote on my motion to adjourn.
It sounds like this woman's saying, please don't shoot. I don't think that's what she's saying. But so there you go. So Richard Blumenthal asked for a roll call on the adjournment. The room went wild with applause, and nothing was done. And they just, Grassley went on talking as if none of those Democrats were saying anything. Because, they don't care what the Democrats have to say. Unbelievable. So the Democrats accused the White House of withholding hundreds of thousands of documents pertaining to Kavanaugh's time in former President George W. Bush's White House. Once again, Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy makes a good point here.
We've received less than half of Chairman Grassley's partial records request, meaning we're moving forward even though we've received a fraction of the records. Even Republicans claim they needed to vet your nomination just a few weeks ago. And then we received an additional 42,000 pages from your record a few hours ago. The notion that anyone here has properly reviewed them or even seen them at all is laughable. It's laughable. It doesn't pass the giggle test. That alone would be a reason to postpone during normal times.
Yep, it sure would be.
But nothing about this is normal. All told, only 4% of your White House record has been shared with the public. Only 7% has been made available to this committee. The rest remains hidden from scrutiny. Compare this to the 99% of Justice Kagan's White House record that was available to all Americans as a result of the bipartisan process I ran with then-ranking member Jeff Sessions when Senator Sessions and I requested him. We got 99%.
99%, not 6%.
What is being hidden and why?
Good question.
And if I've not been clear, I will be so now. Today, the Senate is not simply phoning in our vetting obligation. We're discarding it. It's not only shameful, it's a sham.
It's not only shameful, it's a sham. That was one of the standout lines from yesterday. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island voiced concern over a president who is under investigation naming someone to a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court who might sit in judgment of him.
You come before us nominated by a president named in open court as directing criminal activity and a subject of ongoing criminal investigation.
Yep.
You displayed expansive views on executive immunity from the law. If you are in that seat, sir, because the White House has big expectations that you will protect the president from the due process of law, that should give every senator pause.
Should give every senator pause. Well, of course, the hearing continues today and tomorrow as senators begin questioning Kavanaugh. And yeah, it's going on, and it's just as you thought it would be. Yes. Tuesday, yesterday was primary day in Massachusetts, and there was big news. 10-term incumbent Congressman Michael Capuano was taken out by his more progressive challenger, Boston City Council member Ayanna Pressley.
Just an absolute upset here in the 7th District of Massachusetts. This district had been tested two times by pollster, in February and this August. In February, Capuano was up by 12 points. This August, just a few weeks ago, he was up by 13 points. She got people out that don't typically vote. She's a city council person in Boston. And even though she was part of the political establishment, even though he was a far left by American standards, a progressive liberal Democrat, she was able to best him by getting people out with the basically campaign slogan that change can't wait. She wanted a bolder campaign. Tonight, she talked about doing this not only for women, but for African-American men behind the wall in prison, for immigrants. Here's a little of how she addressed the crowd tonight when she thanked Michael Capuano for making her a better candidate.
Mike Capuano is unapologetically himself. On many occasions throughout the years, when there was a strike or a rally, I would find myself sharing a stage, a microphone, or a bullhorn with him. And, well, he forced me to bring my best, just like in this race. And I thank him for his 20 years of service.
Certainly this is an indication that insurgent energy amongst Democrats across the country, whether it's Florida or Georgia or New York State and now here in Massachusetts, is alive and well. Within an hour and a half of the polls closing, Michael Capuano had conceded this race. He clearly
Amazing.
Knew that the votes were just there for her in a very big way. It seems he may be the victim of a very blue wave already.
And the thing is, Capuano is pretty progressive on his own. And so for Ayanna Pressley to beat him like this, there is an energy out there. And that's why one of the reasons I'm having Greg Pallast on today to talk about what you must do to make sure your voter registration doesn't get, you know, the rug pulled out from under you. It's kind of mixing metaphors, but you know what I'm saying. So, yes, Robert Hill, New York City, in the chat room says, when we vote, we win. And it's true. So if we all show up and we all vote, we can throw these jerks out on their asses. Ayanna Pressley, she's pretty impressive. Here's a little bit of her victory speech. You can tell she's kind of lost her voice by this point.
So let's make this official, y'all. Are you ready to come to Congress with me? Are you ready to bring change to Washington?
Yeah.
Because for the families and victims of senseless gun violence, change can't wait.
So that's Ayanna Pressley, a little bit of her change can't wait. That was her big slogan. This is shaping up to be could be an amazing freshman class of Congress people heading to D.C. for the first time. It's exciting. Ah, and finally, here's the story you've been waiting for. Washington Post veteran reporter Bob Woodward's new book, Fear, Trump in the White House, is set for release next week, next Tuesday. It'll be officially in stores. But excerpts published yesterday sent shockwaves through Washington. Allegations include Trump wanting to assassinate Syrian President Bashar al-Assad following the chemical weapons attack last year, Trump mocking Attorney General Jeff Sessions' accent, calling him, quote, mentally retarded, a, quote, dumb southerner, and a, quote, traitor for recusing himself from doing what he was legally required to do, recusing himself from the Russia investigation and more. Woodward released a recording of his phone call with the president during which he explained that he had tried to arrange to speak with Trump for the book to no avail. I was going to just play a little clip of this phone call, but I listened to the whole thing and it is stunning. And you know what? This is why we have this show, so we don't have to do little tiny sound bites. So we're going to listen to the whole thing because it is that remarkable. So here's the phone call. I don't know who called to. I think Bob Woodward finally called Trump after attempting to get through to him. Well, here's how the conversation went.
Hello, Bob.
President Trump, how are you?
How are you? How are you doing? Okay.
Real well.
Okay.
I'm turning
good.
My tape recorder.
Oh, that's
with
okay.
Your permission.
That's okay.
That's okay.
That's okay.
I'm sorry we missed the opportunity to talk for the book.
Well, I just spoke with Kellyanne, and she asked me if I got a call. I never got a call. I never got a message. Who did you ask about speaking to me?
Well, about six people.
Wow.
They don't tell me.
Senator. I talked to Kellyanne about it 2.5 months ago. She came for lunch.
Well, it's too bad. Of course, you and I had a conversation, a couple of years ago, and so that, I think, got you there a little bit. And we had a conversation many years ago, if you remember, in Trump Tower.
I did.
That has to be 20 years ago. And you were thinking about doing a book about me then, which is interesting.
Oh, he's so full of himself.
Who knew it would have been on this subject, right?
Yeah,
that was not in the cards at that time.
That's right. Well, I'm sorry.
I still remember that.
I spent a lot of time on this, talked to lots of people.
All right, good.
And as you know and are living, we're at a pivot point in history.
Right.
And I would have liked to have done that, and I maximized my effort.
Right.
And somehow it didn't get to you, or
it's really too bad because nobody told me about it, and I would have loved to have spoken to you. You know, I'm very open to you. I think you've always been fair, but we'll see what happens. But all I can say is the country is doing very well.
Oh God,
we're doing better economically, just about that at any time.
Not true.
We're doing better on unemployment, maybe than ever. You know, I mean, if you look at the unemployment numbers, you've heard me say it, and we're doing better on unemployment than just about ever.
Just about ever.
We're having a lot of companies are moving back into our country, which would have been unheard of 2 years ago. If the other administration or representatives of it had kept going or kept, if the other group had won, I will tell you that you
the
would
other
have,
group had won?
I think you'd have a GDP of less than zero. I think we would have been going in the wrong
He's
direction
so
because
delusional.
Regulations are such a big part of what we've done, Bob.
Well, I understand that point of view, and as you know, yeah. It's also a difficult time where the political system and you and my business
are all nuts.
Is being tested.
Yeah.
And I take it very seriously. I've done books on eight presidents going back from Nixon, Obama.
Right.
And I learned something about reporting, frankly, Mr. President.
Good.
Good.
Got to go talk to people and see them outside of the White House and outside of their offices, and gained a lot of insight and documentation. And it's, it's a tough look at the world and your administration and you.
Right. Well, I assume that means it's going to be a negative book, but, I'm sort of 50% used to that. That's all right. Some are good and some are bad. Sounds like this is going to be a bad one.
It's a chance missed, and I don't know how things work over there.
Obviously, he doesn't either. Very well, he says.
Well, if you would call Madeline in my office, did you speak to Madeline?
Who's Madeline?
Madeline is the key. She's the secret.
Oh.
She's the person.
I talked to Kelly.
Well, a lot of them are afraid to come and talk, or, you know, they are busy.
People in his press office are afraid to come and talk to him with an interview request.
20 years ago, I spoke to you a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I certainly don't mind talking to you, and I wish I could have spoken to you.
Well,
but nobody called my office. I mean, you went through, different people.
Mr. President, how can I spend all this time talking to people and like Kellyanne and Raj and Republican senators? I mean,
who were the senators? No, they never called me about it.
Senator Graham said he had talked to you about talking to me. Now, is that not true?
Senator Graham actually mentioned it quickly on one meeting,
right.
And
we'll
that is true. That is true. Well, that is true. Mentioned it quickly, not like, and I would certainly
not like,
thought that maybe you would have called
me. Man,
but that's okay. I'll speak to Kellyanne. I am
articulate.
A little surprised that she wouldn't have told me.
Yeah.
In fact, she just walked in. I'm talking to Bob Woodward. He said that he told you about speaking to me, but you never told me. Why didn't you tell me? I would have been very happy to speak to him. All right, so what are you going to do?
Well, what are you going to do?
So I have another bad book coming out.
It goes on, and, what you can count on is that I've been very careful. And Evelyn, are you on?
Yes.
Evelyn Duffy, who's my assistant, Mr.
Hello, Evelyn.
She transcribed all the tapes because, with permission, I tape people for hundreds of hours.
Good.
And I think there's nothing in this book that doesn't come from a first-hand source. Is that correct, Evelyn?
I believe.
But are you naming names, or do you just say sources?
Yeah. Well, it names real incidents. So.
No, but do you name sources? I mean, are you naming the people, or just say people have said?
I say at 2:00 on this day, the following happened, and everyone who's there, including yourself, is quoted. And I'm sorry I didn't get to ask you about these.
I mean, you do know I'm doing a great job for the country. You do know that NATO now is going to pay billions and billions.
NATO
of dollars
doesn't
more
pay anything,
an
you fucking moron.
Anybody thought possible that other presidents were unable
member
to get
nations
more, and it was
pay for their
downward
own defense.
You do know.
NATO doesn't pay anything,
done,
and it doesn't go into a NATO fund.
I'm in the process of making some of the greatest trade
God,
deals
he's an idiot.
Ever to be made. You do understand that stuff.
I understand, and I would have loved to go through a discussion with you about NATO, because this goes back to early in your administration and your concern about it and the agreement that the countries have that they would increase their defense contribution, by the year 2024.
The Secretary Stoltenberg, he said, I believe $44 billion just last year, and that was from last year's meeting, and this year it's much more money they've agreed to put up. So it's a tremendous amount of money. No other president has done it. It was heading down in the opposite direction, so I don't know if you're going to report it that way. Probably not, but it's too bad, but that's all right. But, one of those things.
Everything is going to be factual, and it is not a good thing for my business, if I may say this to you, Mr. President, to the presidency or to the country, to not have real full exchanges on these. And I broke my spear on it trying to get to you.
Well, other than Lindsay, who did quickly mention nobody mentioned it. Nobody told me about it. Well, let me ask her. Why don't you speak to Kellyanne? Ask her.
This is insane. So he puts Kellyanne Conway on the phone with Bob Woodward.
Remember 2.5 months ago you came over and I laid out I wanted to talk to the president, and you said you would get back to me?
I do, and I put in the request.
But, she's such a slimy thing, isn't she?
I can only take it so far. I guess I can bring it right to the president next time. Yeah. But I try to follow all the protocols, or else I'm accused of being somebody who doesn't follow protocol.
President Trump, I just want you to know I made every effort.
Did you? But you had talked to Hope, right, who said no?
Listen, I talked to anyone I could.
You talked to a number of people, and they all said no?
Raj. He was going to work it out.
Hope. Me. Yeah. So you said you tried to talk to everybody. What about when you interviewed other people? Yeah. They all said yes?
Yeah, well.
That they'd try?
About six or seven people I tried, and I couldn't have, you know, you and I spent a whole lunch on it, Kellyanne, and I said, I want to cover the substantive issues in foreign policy and domestic policy, and you said you would get back to me. Nothing.
Yeah, so anyway. I did. I presented it to the people
sure
here
you
who
did.
Make those decisions. But,
right.
But anyway, I'll give you back to the president, and I'm glad to hear that you tried through seven or eight different people.
I'm glad to hear you tried through seven or eight different people. Tell them all the names so they all get thrown under the bus, too.
But you never called for me. It would have been nice, Bob, if you called for me.
Yeah, because people think they're going to call straight through to the president.
I have two, three secretaries. If you would have called directly, a lot of people are afraid that Raj, I hardly have, you know, I don't speak to Raj. I do, and Kellyanne went to somebody, but she didn't come to me. And she should have come to me. She does have access to me, absolutely. She has direct access, but she didn't come to me. And you know what? That's okay. I'll just end up with another bad book. What can I tell you?
It's surprising to me that these people, did Raj have access to you?
Not really, but he would have been able to do it. But I have an office. You have the office number. I have an office that's directly into my office. It doesn't matter. Let me tell you what matters. The economy is the best it's been
here
in
he goes again.
Many,
it doesn't
many
matter.
Decades, and it's going to get a lot better.
It doesn't matter that you went through the proper channels.
Well. That's what's important.
Yes, sir. I thought
we're
I
doing a good
never,
job.
Kind of say, let's not talk about this because the book is done.
Yeah, I know.
The president, but, you know, that's the position we're in, and it's one I tried to avoid. You need to know I made maximum effort.
All right. It's too bad.
Yes, sir.
I'm just hearing about it, and I heard I did hear from Lindsay, but I'm just hearing about it. So we're going to have a very inaccurate book, and that's too bad.
No,
but I don't blame you entirely.
I don't blame you entirely.
What's accurate is that nobody's ever done a better job than I'm doing as president.
Oh, my God.
I can tell you. So that's and that's the way a lot of people feel that know what's going on.
Right. That's the way a lot of people feel.
But a lot of people feel that, Bob. So
I believe in our country, and because you're our president, I wish you good luck.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it.
I like that. Because you're our president, I wish you good luck. I had to get it into the end where he said, I'm doing the best job any president has ever done. And a lot of people feel that way. But they couldn't get their shit together to have one of the preeminent journalists, White House journalists in the country, who's writing a book, and none of the six or seven or eight people that he spoke to went to Donald Trump and said, Bob Woodward wants to interview you for this book. This is the gang that couldn't shoot straight. It's just, it's insane. I had to share that whole phone call with you because I couldn't believe what I was hearing when I listened to it this morning. All right. Kellyanne used to work for Ted Cruz and did say some pretty harsh things about Trump at the time. They're hired guns. They have no loyalty to anyone. Ugh, they're just sleazy, slimy people. All right. Done with that. Let's talk about electoral politics, shall we? I know. Let's get Greg Palast on the line. I'm not even going to break anywhere. Let's just call Greg. And, we're doing it live. We'll just do it this way. Greg Palast, you know, he's an investigative journalist, the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Armed Madhouse. Of course, we all know Greg Palast through his investigative reports for BBC Television, The Guardian.
Hello, Greg Palast.
There's Greg Palast. Hey, it's Nicole Sandler calling.
Yeah. Okay, hang on one second. Just tell her to call me at the...
He was on another line.
Okay, hello.
Hey, Greg Palast, how are you?
Okay. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to get through the regime.
I understand. That's all you had to say. No, I it's crazy time. Just watching, listening back to some of the phone call, the recording between Bob Woodward and Donald Trump. We are in some weird times in this country right now.
When haven't we been? You know, I'm old enough to remember Nixon. You know, so none of this bothers me.
Really?
So, you know, and I just got back from deepest, darkest Wichita,
yes.
Kansas.
That's why I'm calling.
Where, where I am now. I was on a hunt for Chris Kobach of Kansas, the Secretary of State. He's running for governor now. Mm-hmm. And I was running around trying to find him to serve him with a federal lawsuit. He is, of course, Chris Kobach of Kansas. He's Secretary of State.
Right.
He's in charge of the voter rolls.
Mm-hmm.
He's also running for governor. He counts the votes.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was a conflict of interest when he was in the Republican primary. He agreed it was a conflict of interest for him to be involved in counting the votes. But somehow when he's running against a Democrat and an independent, there's no conflict. And we have that same, by the way, problem in Georgia. You know, you have Jack Kemp, Brian Kemp.
Brian Kemp, right.
God forbid. Jack Kemp was a Republican, but not
yes,
a
Republican. Yes, he was. Right.
Brian Kemp had removed 591,000 voters from the voter rolls. Has been closing polling stations in black areas all over the state. Glad the New York Times finally caught up to that.
Yes.
I did that report a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, and this guy is, basically purging and bleaching the voter rolls whiter than white and running for governor at the same time against Stacey Abrams, who, if elected, be the first black female governor in American history. So obviously, since he can't win by convincing the voters, he's just removing voters.
Right.
That
he just
convinced.
Has to cheat. Right. Now, is
and
he?
So,
is...
yeah. So I'm suing him, too, by the way, just so you know. Now I say I'm suing him
mm-hmm.
In coordination with Helen Butler of the New Georgia Coalition for a People's Agenda.
Okay.
I'm suing Republican GOP, the GOP voting chiefs of Illinois. With the my co-plaintiff there is the Reverend Jesse Jackson,
yes.
And in Kansas, I'll be suing. We have the great voting rights lawyer who's usually representing the ACLU, Robert I, in Kansas, going against Chris Kobach of Kansas, who of course is Trump's purging general. He's the guy who comes up with all these purge sheets that are used in other states. 500,000 people purged in Ohio. We're suing. Oh, that guy too. John Houston. I'm going to be busy. I'm filing 26 federal lawsuits over the next few weeks.
Oh, my.
I want to thank the astonishingly energetic law firm of Jeannie Meyer, Meyer, Mazzocchi, Julian, the great plaintiff's law firm, which is actually is going to be counsel in all these states, and they will have local counsel as
wow.
well. But they're going to steal 2020. They're stealing as much as they can out of 18,
mm-hmm.
but the tide is against them. The blue tide is against them. But there's just not enough white guys to reelect Donald Trump, so they got to remove the non-white guys, and that's what I've been up to. And that's why I was in Wichita with the Women for Kansas organization, showing my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and then Kobach ducked from me, as usual. And, and in my film, you see that I jump him, but that I can't tell you how elaborate and expensive and difficult it was to actually get this, to be able to confront this guy on camera.
Oh, I'll bet.
And I'm tired of playing hide-and-seek with public officials. We have a terrific private investigations firm, which is, they will find him. He is running for governor. He has a 50 caliber toy machine gun glued to the top of his car, so he
oh
should
my
be
God.
Easy to locate.
Oh my God.
I can't make that up.
So
we will serve him
who
with a federal lawsuit on September 10th.
Okay.
And he can run, but he can't hide. And that lawsuit will require him to give us the name of every voter he has wrongly purged from the voter rolls and see if we can get them back on and challenge his whole system. And we are demanding that the minions who purge voters at his behest in Georgia, in Ohio, in Illinois, and in 20 other states, that they turn over their list to us. Some are, by the way, because facing the federal lawsuit deadline, Georgia actually had a deadline of today. So yesterday they sent us notice that they will comply rather than have to then have Brian Kemp have his white behind dragged into a federal courtroom.
So then, if the deadline is today, then when do they get you the names by?
Well, I mean, one of the problems is, of course, if they say we are complying,
right.
You know, this is the games that they play. We're complying, so don't sue us. It's hard to go into federal court because they'll immediately say, well, we just sent them a note that said we're complying. So it's a lot of games that they play here. Ohio said that they're complying, and they dumped a bunch of – they just dumped millions of computer files on us, literally. It was junk. So they, you know, there's pretend compliance. They know that they are violating federal law. This is the laws that were passed to put an end to Jim Crow. And these guys, you know, they are now, you know, it's now Dr. James Crow database consultant.
Oh,
you know? And I'm sorry, it still has the same effect as Knight Riders in white hoods.
Mm-hmm.
You are removing black voters en masse. Brian Kemp removed in this last election cycle 591,000 voters. This is not small stuff. And, you know, on the excuses that they were on Kris Kobach's cross-check list, which 7 million people are accused of being registered in two states.
Right.
And they use it. By the way, they haven't arrested anyone for a crime of doing this, or, you know, voting in two states. They're saying, oh, these people have moved, and therefore we can remove them from the voter rolls. But we have had some states give us the list, I have to tell you. And like in Oklahoma, I saw the list that they just – because they didn't want to face a federal suit. So they actually gave us some real lists of voters that they removed. And they're removing people who had moved into Oklahoma who hadn't removed their old addresses in Kentucky, for example. This is a real case, repeated thousands of times, where they moved into the state of Oklahoma, registered to vote. Their old registration is still on the record, so they said, oh, you've moved to Kentucky. No, if you look at the dates on the registration, the Kentucky registration is years old. They just registered in Oklahoma. They don't want the new young voters. They know what they – these are voters of color, the color being blue, Democratic, and they want to stop it.
It's amazing. In Georgia, Greg Palast, didn't – there was – okay, the story about they were going to close seven of nine – polling places in predominantly black areas, and that was stopped, wasn't it?
No.
Really?
I know it's a nice story. We want to say we got a win.
Yeah.
There was a small victory. Here's what happened.
Okay.
And I've just been speaking to Georgia.
Yes.
Brian Kemp, who is Secretary of State, and again running for Congress against Stacey Abrams.
Right.
He sent consultants all over the state to with the instructions, tell, say the Secretary of State's office that you've got to start closing polling stations for, you know, whatever reason they can come up with. It's not, it doesn't have a ramp for wheelchairs, you know, something like that. And whatever you can do in black areas.
Right.
That's where they're closing them. Now, in one county where they made the mistake is that they took a county which is overwhelmingly black voters with a overwhelmingly black county board of supervisors. When they found out, when their so-called consultant from Brian Kemp said, you know, you have to close most of your polling stations in the entire county. I mean, you know, like you say, seven out of nine polling stations in the entire county. They said, well, clearly you're doing this because it's the black county, but the bigger story, and they stopped it. They said, no, we're not going along with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was stopped. It was publicized. The problem was is that in the white-controlled counties, they are closing polling stations in the black areas. And for example, this was critical and crucial to the defeat of John Ossoff. If you remember back in Georgia's 6th CD, in Georgia's 6th Congressional District, there was a special election. And in that special election, in Georgia 6, they shut down a bunch of the polling stations in northern Atlanta, which was the African-American area. And they didn't shut down the stations in the northern part of the district toward Alpharetta, which is the white part of the district. And that was one of the reasons why John Ossoff lost in the runoff to Karen Handel, who again, she was the before Kemp, she was the Secretary of State.
Oh,
this is what these people
do. Isn't that
interesting? They bleached. Yeah, so they. I confronted her. I can't say it was the most pleasant meeting I've ever had. Several of her goons literally started roughing me up. And she liked it when I asked her a question. I asked her if the Democrats were stealing the election from her. I give them a chance to make their case.
Mm-hmm.
And she started explaining that to me. And I said, fine, now what about you? Now, here's some of the things that you've done. You've used cross-check and other means to reduce the voter rolls. You sent in the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to shut down, to harass and shut down the Asian American voting operation. And then suddenly the answer was that I was being pushed, shoved, slammed around, and screamed at by her supporters. So, you know, that was the response. But so you have to understand the closing of the voting stations is still going on in Georgia. It's just that in the black counties where black people can say no, they're stopping it.
I see.
The problem is in the white counties with black minority areas, they're still closing those stations.
Unbelievable.
It is horrific. And obviously, I guess they could always, the black voters can always, of course, appeal to Jeff Sessions, Jeff Beauregard Sessions at the Justice Department.
Sure.
I know that we're supposed to like Sessions because, you know, Trump hates him. You know, for pretending to do his job. But when it comes to voting rights, I just want to remind you that Jeff Sessions actually said there is no reason to have the Voting Rights Act at all. So to ask him to enforce it is good luck.
It's amazing. So, Greg Palast, so the last weekend you were in Kansas dealing, you had a screening of the movie. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election, which, by the way, is available on Amazon and Prime or at gregpalast.com. People can watch it just like that. It's always being updated. So you did a screening of the movie and you did the work you needed to do to file this lawsuit against Kris Kobach. Did you then go to Atlanta or you're yet to go to Atlanta?
We are going to Atlanta. I want to see what Kemp. I have to do all the cross all the T's and dot the legal I's. We got terrific lawyers on this. And if Kemp, you know, Kemp's playing games. Obviously, he's trying to delay my lawsuit to past the election. And he's trying to obviously even if he can't delay my filing the suit, he can delay giving us the list because one of the things we want to do. He removed 591,000 people. We want their names. The biggest thing we want to do is tell people, you've been purged.
Right.
You better sign up again. October 9, by the way, if you're in Georgia, October 9 is your cutoff for registration. And here's what you can do. Don't wait for me to get the list and get your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Georgia Secretary of State site where you can look up whether you are still on the voter rolls. And please, I know I can't tell you how many people say, I've been voting in the same place 20 years, and then suddenly they show up and their name is missing.
Amazing.
Don't wait till election day. It's too late. Now, what they will do is they will give you a provisional ballot. It's like a placebo ballot. You'll think that you voted, but you haven't.
Right.
And in Georgia, if your name is removed from the voter rolls, whether it was wrongly removed or not. If your name's on the voter rolls, your name's on the voter rolls, and your provisional ballot can't count. So please check your registration. And that goes for everyone in all states.
Right. I was just going to ask that.
There's so much purging going on that by, you know, the GOP, like I say, Kris Kobach, the purge in general, has massive campaigns going on to remove voters from the voter rolls on cockamamie reason, usually voters of color. And if you have a common name, like if your name is James Brown, you really better check the voter rolls because they're likely to have removed you. This is our experience. Check it out.
Yeah.
And
so
by the way,
you can do this in any state. You go to your state Secretary of State website. I mean, what's the best way people can check on their registration?
There's two places. Every state has to have a central database that you can check, that you can look up your name to see if you're registered. And by the way, make sure that they have your name right, your address mm-hmm. right, everything. And if not, you better correct it. The other is if you go to your county board of elections, every county has one, county board of elections, you can look up your name there. Now, I'm on at gregpalace.com. I'm going to start putting up all the locations you can go, so you can go hit that perfect link that will get you through the maze of your state voting official at gregpalace.com. We'll be getting that up soon. But the thing is that it's usually pretty apparent on the homepage of your Secretary of State. But especially if you're in Georgia, mm-hmm. if you're in Kansas, if you're in Ohio, you're nuts if you're not looking up your registration.
Right. Look, I live in Florida, and I vote absentee. I have a question for you about that. But I check at least once a month just to make sure it's there. I got my absentee ballot. I filled it out. We hand deliver it to the supervisor of elections office just to make sure it doesn't get lost between, you know, here and there with the Postal Service. And so you can check and make sure that it arrived there and they got it. That's the best we can do in Florida. I will check again before the general election, even though I voted in the primary, because I don't trust these people.
Don't. It's in Rick Scott's operation in Florida. Look, he can't win if he count the votes, so he's got to remove voters.
Mm-hmm.
And, now Rick Scott was the guy who basically sent 181,000 Floridians notices that they have been tagged as potential alien voters.
Oh, my God.
He convicted one, who, by the way, was a Republican, registered uh-huh. Republican from Austria.
Wow.
Think about that. And that won. But 181,000 voters were challenged. Many were told that they actually had to make court appearances. That's what's going on. And then we had that in Kansas, same thing with the attack on voters being challenged as aliens because they couldn't produce a proof of citizenship. Cause it's hard to have proof of citizenship in America. We're not Red China. We don't have citizenship
right,
cards.
Right.
And that's what they tried in Kansas. And similar laws are now in Alabama and Arizona, but they have not been enforced because they know that federal suits would soon follow by private parties. I mean, again, we don't expect the Justice Department to provide any justice on these matters. So that's why we have to kind of take justice into our own hands mm-hmm. by filing a lawsuits in more than 20 states under the National Voter Registration Act of 1995, better known as the Motor Voter Law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a better world, I wouldn't be filing these lawsuits. We'd have a federal government and a Department of Justice
who
voting
would do
rights
it.
Division
right.
that should be filing it.
Hey, yeah. Greg Palast, who pays for this? This can't be inexpensive.
Filing in 26 states and running around mm-hmm. and filming it? no, it's intensely expensive, and I appreciate the opening to say I am supported by a not-for-profit, nonpartisan foundation, the Palast Investigative Fund. If you go to gregpalast.com, you can get like a signed DVD of our film or other swagger. Or guess what? Until Patriot Act 3, we're allowed to even sell the book, The Best Democracy Money Ooh. Can Buy, and I'll sign them if you make a tax-deductible donation. And so I appreciate the several thousand people, actually, who have come and donated to help us file these suits. I have to say that the law firms are working pro bono.
Wow.
My two favorite words in
yes.
law.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean it's anything but free. We have database experts. We have, you know, the number of people working on this that we've had to hire is substantial. And one of the things we're going to be doing, which is not cheap, but really important, they're falling one state after another and turning over documents, we're putting up the purge lists on our site in a way that you can put in your name and see if you've been purged.
Awesome.
At the moment, I'm telling you, you have to kind of go to your Secretary of State and kind of find it. We're actually going to centralize, so you just have to go to gregpalace.com, put in your name, and we're working on that database operation right now.
By the way, the website looks great. You just did a redesign or something, because it's
yeah, we just redesigned it, so it doesn't look too 90s. And that's gregpalace.com, gregpalace.com, to get the reports on the lawsuits, the whole thing, including actually the filings we've already put in front of Kobach, because we have asked that they produce this material. We're not just surprising them. They get a 90-day notice. They have plenty of time to do the right thing. And I have to say that some states, like Kentucky, bravo, their response, and Massachusetts, their response is what I really like to hear is, we're getting out of Kobach's program, so that's our response. We're just not going to purge these people at all, so don't worry. You know, we are still insisting that they give us the old purge list, but Kentucky, Massachusetts, doing the right thing, saying we're not going to do this anymore. So
good.
We're not going to file cases, but we do want them to give us help us get back the people that were purged by basically GOP minions. It's almost all. I can't say it's every single one of these voting officials is a Republican, but it's about 90%.
Wow, and that says a lot. Greg, I got a question for you from a listener. Listener Val tweeted yesterday. She writes, Nicole Sandler watched Greg Palast's terrific The Best Democracy Money Can Buy this weekend. He notes many absentee ballots are rejected over technicalities. Funny scene where even his sister, a lawyer, made mistakes. Maybe we shouldn't be voting absentee at all if avoidable. What do you say to that?
Let me underscore that word, if avoidable.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it is much, much better to vote in person and vote early, do early voting.
Early
that gives
voting
you two advantages.
Person.
One, if there's a problem with your registration in some states, you may have time to correct it. Second, we have well over 1 million absentee ballots are thrown out on really cockamamie grounds. They challenge your signature. Oh, it doesn't match exactly. That's a big problem in South Carolina and California. In some states, you added a middle initial, you used the wrong envelope. Postage due, by the way, is a big one. Most states do not pay the postage, and if your postage due, you just for 20 cents you threw away your vote.
Yep.
There's so many grounds that they can challenge you, and of course they know who you are. They know kind of how you voted because just from your zip code, your address, they know who's voting.
Right.
And they look at the outside of the envelope. And that makes you susceptible to challenge. And in some states where they really want to reduce those absentee ballots from places that they don't like, they do it. Otherwise, the GOP will challenge your ballot, and you don't even know it in most states. The only state I know of that really lets you know that someone's challenged your ballot and you can correct that, that's in Oregon, and which is, it's Portlandia up there. So
right.
You know how that
I'll tell you. I'll tell you
so
something.
They're nice people.
Something that happened here in Florida. Yeah. My husband, we did our absentee ballots. He dropped them off at the supervisor of elections office. He got a phone call that they said he forgot to sign his ballot, and he actually didn't. But his signatures, like his initials, and he signed it right next to where the date is, so that it looks like there's a long empty place on the back of the envelope where you're supposed to sign it, and they didn't look far enough over to the right to see his signature. But I was shocked, frankly, that they actually called to say, you need to come down
thrilled.
Here and sign.
What county was that?
This is Broward County, where we've been having problems. Huh. Big problems.
Well, that's good, because, it's rare, and that's excellent. In some counties, if you literally sign it at the wrong spot, they won't look for your signature.
Yep.
They'll say, even if they see your signature and it's at the wrong spot, they'll disqualify it. This is one of the big problems of absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. Just any little error. And like, for example, Ohio, it says driver's license number to fill in.
Yeah.
If you don't have a driver's license and you leave it blank, you've disqualified your ballot. Write no license.
Oh, my God.
You have to write in no license. You can't leave it blank, and you will lose your vote. So this is one of the things that, you have to be careful of with your – and it, look, if you have no choice, if that's the only reasonable way you can vote, don't throw away your own vote. Don't steal your own vote by not voting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's – you know, we just have to be realistic that it's, you know, it's between 1 and 2 million absentee ballots a year are disqualified. And – oh, they know, and it's not like random. It's disqualified in voters of color have a 900% higher chance of having their votes disqualified on a technical grounds than a white voter.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Florida is horrific.
Yeah. Yes, it is, in many more ways than one. All right, Greg Palast, we've got like a minute left. So the lawsuits are, the ball is rolling in Kansas and in 26 other states. You're doing this. But you're looking really for 2020. Nothing is going to be resolved before November 6th, is it?
Oh, I actually think we'll get a lot of, we're going to save a lot of votes by election night, because I think we're going to get, this is helping simply publicize the idea mm-hmm. to just check your registration.
Yes.
Two, we're stopping some of the purges because it's the old thing, you know, when you turn on the light, the cockroaches run to the wall. Some of these states are going to stop purging people at the last minute here because our eyes are on them.
Mm.
And that will help. Plus, once we get our list up, people can look up their names. I think it's going to be
Greg, we're running out of time. So we'll send everyone
to
gregpalast.com. There you go. Thank you so much, Greg. I'll send everyone over there.
Okay, bye.
You take care. Bye-bye. Greg Palast, everyone. Greg Palast. PALAST.com is where you find all his information.